As SeaWorld ends its controversial practice of breeding orcas in captivity for its theme park, our next guest has spent his life photographing whales in the wild.
Charles Nicklin, who goes by the name Flip, learned a lot from his father, who is also one of the top marine photographers in the world. By some measures, most of the published images of whales in circulation were taken either by Flip Nicklin or his father.
Charles Flip Nicklin joins us now. He'll be appearing in Madison as part of the National Geographic series at Madison's Overture Center on Tuesday, May 2nd. The event is called Among Giants, A Life with Whales. Flip, welcome to Central Time.
It's great to be here.
Well, you've said that looking into the eye of a whale or a dolphin changes you, and you go on to say, I wish everyone had that experience. How does it change you?
Well, I guess I can say the first big story I did for National Geographic was sharks, and enjoyed the 2 years I spent doing research with sharks and looking in sharks' eyes, and there was just a big difference between looking in the shark eye that didn't give you that much back and looking into a whale or dolphin eye, where at least the way I saw it, they were saying so much without saying anything.
So do you feel when you are up close with a whale or a dolphin and you are having that eye-to-eye contact, do you feel as though there's some kind of communication that's passing between you somehow?
Oh, certainly. I think the nonverbal communication, as you feel with a dog or a child before it can talk, there's all kinds of communication that's going on, body language, tilts of the head. You're getting all kinds of stuff if you're tuned in to what's going to happen and what's happening.
Do you ever track particular whales, for instance, from season to season, from shoot to shoot, and you almost feel like you get a sense for their personality like you would with a dog?
Well, yes, and one of the things that I discovered as I started doing this 40 years ago was that there are over 80 types of whales, dolphins, and porpoise. And there are different cultures and different setups where humpback whales in Hawaii, we very seldom see the same whale 2 days in a row, and maybe we'll see the same one every couple of years. So it's not that ongoing relationship. In Alaska, where they're feeding, we see the same whale every day. And you're right, when you get into types of whales, dolphins, cetaceans, that there are different cultures, there's different subgroups, and there's different individual personalities. And I think that we usually talk in great generalities about these animals, but it gets back to the individual being the thing that changes from day to day, minute to minute.
Now, I know that photographing whales and dolphins, it runs in your family. Your dad paved the way for you. He had a legendary career as a marine photographer. What did you learn from him along the way?
That if you're easy to work with, there'll be more work. And I think the biggest thing with following my father, who's still, my father's going to be 90 in September. He's planning his underwater birthday party in Micronesia. So,
wow.
And everywhere I went, being Chuck's son, at least gave people, they would give me a chance. They'd let me in. They'd give me an in that maybe an unknown photographer might not get. But following him because of who he was, not what he did, was the important thing.
And I read this story that you were photographing sperm whales off the coast of Sri Lanka, and you actually ran into your father underwater, who was, I guess, doing the same thing.
My brother and I were on one boat doing research and dove under a group of animals freediving. And saw people in the foreground. It was my dad and his assistant, and I think we both told the other guy to get out of the way.
You know? That's crazy. Well, I guess when it runs in your family, that might happen from time to time.
And certainly all my diving, all this stuff came from my dad, especially in 1963 when my dad rode a whale and was one of the first guys to photograph whales underwater. That changed life for him and for me.
Right, and your father opened a dive shop before he had this huge career, and I understand that, for instance, Jacques Cousteau used to shop at this dive store he ran. Did you ever get to meet Jacques Cousteau and mingle with him at all?
I did. I was just a little kid, but I met him and his son, Philippe, who was killed in the plane crash, was a hero of mine growing up. And diving was very, very small, so there were only two dive shops in San Diego. But there's still Jacques came and talked to one of the dive classes. And some of those guys are still around telling people that Jacques Cousteau told them to talk to their dive class. Of course, nobody believes them.
You mentioned free diving a little bit ago. Can you talk about what free diving is and how you got into it?
Well, I started free diving when I was about 12. Snorkeling. Fins, mask, and snorkel, take a big breath and go down. The simplest kind of diving, I've always preferred that to all the gear. I did that in the 60s. If you came in and wanted to learn to scuba dive, we'd want you to be a free diver first or a snorkeler first. And often my father would try and encourage people to get a wetsuit, fins, mask, and snorkel, and free dive for months before they thought about getting into scuba.
What is that experience like? I understand you can go down something like 90 feet. What is it like when you're shooting photographs and you're kind of stripped free? You're almost not quite a dolphin, but you're a little more in that natural element.
Well, yeah, I in talking about the photography of these animals, especially that kind of diving, we're diving 60, 70, 80 feet. Just imagine holding your breath for 30 or 40 seconds and then see how much you can think about art. I mean, mainly it was dive down, stay as long as you could, hope to get something. And I think of it as sort of enlightened snapshots where all your planning had to be before you made the dive, because when you were down there, you just didn't have time and you weren't thinking very clearly.
What have you photographed down there when you're free diving?
Almost all the whale stuff I've done has been free diving. Probably 99% of the pictures I've ever taken of whales, dolphins, and porpoises underwater has been snorkeling. And today, that's all I do. And it's worked out pretty well. One of the things is a lot of marine mammals use bubbles as a signaling device, as a display. And so to go down there and be blowing bubbles and making some kind of a display where you don't know what you're saying to an 80,000-pound animal just didn't seem to make too much sense. If I could dive down there quietly, holding my breath, I was just less likely to change the behavior I was trying to photograph.
We're talking with Flip Nicklin right now, one of the world's premier marine photographers. He has decades of experience, known for his photographs of whales and dolphins, and he's the author of the book, Among Giants, A Life with Whales. And Flip, I know you really believe in the power of a photograph to tell a story. In fact, you say that you tell young photographers that your photograph should have a story behind it, that you could almost talk for an hour about this photograph. And I wonder if you could share a story or two with us about one of the photographs you've taken and the story behind it.
Oh, sure. And this is an above water picture, but I think people can relate to it. Is everybody's seen a picture of a breaching whale, a whale jumping out of the water? And when digital photography was new, we found a young yearling humpback whale jumping over and over again. My research partner, Jason Sturgis, was in the water shooting video, and this animal would come up as like a year-old calf leaving mom. Jason could see it coming, so he could hoot through his snorkel, and I'd know the animal was going to come up. And I ended up getting some very nice images of Jason in the foreground, this whale exploding out of the water. And the fun thing was we could have digital. I could show it to him when he got out of the water. We could go to other research folks and show them the picture. Everybody thought it was great until we showed Jason's mother, Judy. And, of course, her question was, do whales always jump away from you? So there's a million stories. If we work 100 days doing stuff as we do in Hawaii, there'll be 2 or 3, 4 hours of the situations that might make pictures that will be shown when I'm in Madison. And you remember those pictures. And most of them you could go on and on about because they were so hard fought to get.
And you've had decades doing this, I imagine hundreds and hundreds of dives at this point. Is there a dive that sticks with you that you remember as being just special and different from the others?
Well, yeah, there is, and there are quite a few. But I was photographing what we call a friendly humpback. It was two animals under the boat. They came back over and over again right under the boat, moving slowly, and I slipped in the water. And this animal came up very, very close. A whale can't swim backwards. So the first time the whale slipped by, the second time it put on the brake. It stopped right next to me, rolled into me and picked me up on his pectoral fin and brought me up to its eye. Like you'd pick up a grasshopper and take a look at it.
Wow.
And I'll show a video clip of that in a couple of days.
Oh, my goodness. What did that feel like?
You know, I don't know. People always ask what I'm thinking. I'm not thinking. I'm trying to make sure that the picture's right, the exposure's right. I was shooting video, which is something I haven't done very much of. But when I got it back, it was 9 seconds. The whole thing lasted for 9 seconds, but I'll never forget it.
Mm. Well, I know that you care deeply about marine conservation, and you founded Whale Trust. It's a marine research and education organization based in Maui. What research are you most excited about when it comes to the stuff we don't know about whales?
Well, one of the things that changed how we think about whales, there was a cusp in the late 60s and 70s where we went from a hunting myth to a preservation myth with cetaceans. And Song of the Humpback Whale was played to Congress in 1970. And you've all heard the song. The biggest record first printing ever was National Geographic's 10 million copies of the Song of the Humpback Whale in 1979. And that song is something we've studied. I came into supporting this work in 1996. I had a windfall, and I contacted Dr. Jim Darling, who's an expert in whale song, and the behavior around it. And just trying to find out what that song means. It captured the public. It captured our attention. We still don't know really what it means. And I really feel to understand what song is, we'll have to know the whole social system of humpback whales. And that's just a great thing to chase.
Hmm. And Flip, I know that not everyone can do what you do, but what do you want us to know about why we should all care about whales, even if we've never seen one ourselves?
I don't want to say whales aren't important. They've been very important to me. But whales need a clean ocean, a healthy ocean, and food to eat. They need all the things we need. So they're a great icon for the health of the sea. And the health of the sea should be important to all of us, whether we really care about whales or not.
Flip, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Flip Nicklin is one of the world's leading marine photographers, decades of experience behind him. He's the author of the book Among Giants, A Life with Whales.
He'll be speaking at Madison's Overture Center tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m.